The Pacers made their move. They filled their two-way roster spot. They opened up yesterday, bringing in Gabe York for the second season in a row. The terrific scoring guard is back with the Pacers for their final five games, for their final 10 days. Jay Rigdon from Awful Announcing is going to join us to break down the signing and what it means. Plus, the Smith-Jackson pairing, Jalen Smith and Isaiah Jackson. How have they done together? What does that mean for the Pacers long-term? And a little bit of Pacers Thunder talk ahead of the game tonight. All coming on today's Locked On Pacers podcast.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and SI, and today, lots of fun stuff to get to. Pacers' final home game of the second-to-last week of their season, which is crazy to say tonight, Pacers-Thunder. Talk a little bit about the Pacers and the Thunder at the end, but first, Pacers make a signing. Gabe York back with the Pacers. He spent the last couple days of last season with the team. He killed it for the Bad Ends once again this year. Another guard in the mix for the Pacers on a two-way deal for the final 10 days of their season. Jay Rigdon from Awful Announcing is going to join us in a couple seconds to talk about the signing, what it means for the Pacers, where York could help out when he's available, all sorts of interesting little tidbits there. Then talk about another pairing, as we've been doing on a lot of shows recently, Jalen Smith plus Isaiah Jackson. How have they done together? Why that's important for the Pacers and what it could signal potentially for the future of this team in the summer with their tight roster. It's all coming with Jay Rigdon today on Locked On Pacers. Let's do it. We are now joined by Jay Rigdon, multiple time guest, friend of the pod now. I don't know what the right words are. I just use the same ones for everybody. He's a contributor at Awful Announcing. He's been on here many times talking Pacers. Jay, 10 more days in this Pacers season. Can you even believe that?
No, flown right past. as with all time now these days.
Yeah, as of this Friday game, it's the last day you can sign a 10-day contract. After that, it's just a regular rest of the season deal. There's no point anymore. I can't believe we're at that point. And speaking of signings, the Pacers did, in fact, make one as soon as they could on Thursday, bringing in Gabe York up from their G League team. If this sounds like deja vu, that's because this is exactly what the Pacers did last year when they waived Kiefer Sykes. They brought in Gabe York on a two-way deal very soon after, so it is his second stint with the Pacers in their guard rotation. He's on a two-way deal again because he's able to be. That dude can score in the G League, right? Over 15 points a game, four straight seasons, over 20 points per game in each of the last two seasons. And last year, because he finished the season on a two-way with the Pacers, he stayed in Indy like all summer. So technically, he's still under contract and was working out with Tyrese Haliburton a lot and all the other Pacers who did in town. He said that was really big for him in terms of his motivation and growth to get back into the league. And was big for him. When I talked to him during the G League season, he says he knows he's NBA quality, which he is, obviously, because he's on an NBA roster now. And Gabe York is back. Presumably will fill some of the George Hill minutes if he is able to play, though Buddy Hield could return soon. He practiced on Thursday. Jay, any takes on the Gabe York signing? I have a couple smaller ones, but I'm curious if you have any.
Yeah, for me, it's kind of more of like an overarching thing. Like, it's kind of like two things. One, congrats to Gabe York. Like, yes. The NBA is like the hardest league to get on a roster, like in American pro sports. They're much smaller rosters and it's very hard to do. Like if you're on the fringes of that, like that you're an incredible basketball player, like regardless. So good for him. I'm glad he's back or there. And I think the other thing is, this is a great example of the Pacers kind of like taking an opportunity to give someone who was in their G League program a chance like this and kind of give them some run at the end of the year. And I think when you're a team like the Pacers that has limited avenues to acquire talent, like being able to say like to agents, like in the undrafted free agent market, hey, like if your player comes here, you're going to get a chance at some point. Like we believe in that. Like we work with this program, like it's part of our entire thing. And I think that can have like dividends down the road too, when you do stuff like this. So I was happy to see it.
Yeah. They promote a Mad Ant basically every year. I think they have done it every year of the Pritchard era. I was about to name them all. That'd be stupid. But Ben Moore for sure, Trey McKinney Jones, Stephon Hicks, Gabe York 2 years in a row now, Justin Anderson. To name a few of many. Terry Taylor even last year, right? And the most notable one is O'Shea Brissett, who they drafted in the G League draft before the bubble year. So all it takes is one of them doing that a bunch to pop, and you get a guy like an NBA dude, right? So like that system makes a lot of sense. You get those guys in your backyard. You have, you know, Tom Hankins works as a Pacers assistant when he's not the Mad Ants head coach, right? Like, they just get a lot of cohesion there. And that's been helpful for York, who was obviously awesome for the Mad Ants last year, but was just as good this year. So when the roster spot opened up, perfect fit. And yeah, breaking into the NBA is hard, especially at 28 and 29 years old, right? Like, after 7 years of not, to get into the league is impressive. Jalen Smith, glowing review of Gabe York. I'm going to read this quote verbatim. This is exactly what Jalen Smith said at practice on Thursday. He said, "Gabe is a pure scorer. That's what he does best, put the ball in the basket. He does it better than most people in the NBA." He is that level. He looked natural with the ball last year in those two games he played. If you recall, I should have said this earlier. He did play two games for the Pacers at the end of last season, scored 8 points in those games. I think he had 4 assists. Like, you know, first two NBA games didn't look awesome, but at least like moved around well and looked like he belonged. And I don't know what his situation will be this year. It's worth pointing out here. Two-way contract rules get updated every year. COVID really changed him, but this year, the maximum is 50 games you can be active for if you're on a two-way for a season. And there's only 5 games left, so that sounds like he could play all 5, but that's 50 out of 82, and the fraction is what applies. So York can only be active for 3 of the Pacers' last 5 games. So he's not going to play in all of them. Buddy Hield could come back, so it's not exactly clear what his role will be. But, you know, if in those George Hill minutes we've been seeing the last couple of games, perhaps Gabe York could get some of those. If Duarte and Halliburton remain out, there'll be some time. So I don't know exactly how often or how much he will be able to play, even if it's just practice time. Another healthy body is better than none. So we'll see. But, you know, he deserves to be back after the season he had.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good reward for him. It's kind of weird how it happened with the Trevor Linquin suspension and waving and everything like
that. Yeah, I don't know if there's any link there. It's certainly a strange 30 hours, I would say.
Yes.
More than that.
Yeah. Weird time on the Pacers roster wire there. But yeah, it's good for him. I hope and maybe he comes up and shows something and it looks like, you know, it works into another deal next year, either in Indiana or somewhere else. And that's a great opportunity.
The thing about doing something like this is technically, having a guy under contract is easier to make him like a restricted free agent. So if like you knew for sure you weren't going to have Trevor Linquin back and there's like a 0.5% chance you'll have Gabe York back, that's better, right? That's better for not only this season, but for your team building next season. So bringing in somebody you like more, can fill a spot better at this time, makes a lot of sense. York obviously knows all these guys from last year, from whoever got G League assignments, from working out with them in the summer. So a lot of reasons this is a natural fit. I thought it'd be Jermaine Samuels. That was my prediction, but I did say York was the second most likely Mad Ant of the guys. So it does make sense for a lot of ways. And I think the way he'll help, he described it well, that, you know, in transition, he'll be able to do anything with the ball. And the Mad Ants were a bunch of wings and like Gabe York and David Stockton, basically. So this will be different for him in terms of a roster construction standpoint, but his skill set kind of lends itself to the way the Pacers play this year more so than last year, which I think will help him look a little better when he is able to play and go. So I don't know exactly, again, what his role will be or how many minutes he'll even get when he is active. I presume he'll play at least a game or two. There's no point of, I mean, there is a point to having him just for practices, but if you're going to call him up, throw him in the game. So we'll see what that actually looks like in terms of minutes, but I think that in transition, he can fit really well. I think identity-wise, he can fit really well. His defense has never been his strong point, but anything he shows on that end, great. That'll help him for next year. We'll see where that ends up.
Yep, I think you've summed it all up there.
Not a lot else on that. We're talking about the 17th guy to 17 on the roster with 10 days to go. But hey, Pacers rifling through the transactions at a key time. Hey guys, let's take one short little break so I can talk to you guys about FanDuel, the NCAA tournament heating up. Final Four coming very soon tonight. It gets going. No better place to get in on the action than FanDuel, America's number one sports book. That's because right now, FanDuel is giving new customers a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Just go to FanDuel.com/lockedon and sign up today to claim your no-sweat first bet. Then you can wager on everything from the money line to point spreads to which team will be cutting down the net, all on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So don't miss your shot at a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 when you join FanDuel today. Just go to FanDuel.com/lockedon to sign up. Make every moment more with FanDuel. Jay, let's pivot. I've been doing this with every guest for my last 3 guests. A duo on the Pacers that I have found interesting recently and why I think it's interesting. The first one was the big one, Tyrese Haliburton and Ben Mathurin. The second one was Jordan Wara and O'Shea Brissett, not because maybe those two have this future together. In fact, Brissett, expiring contract, could not even be on the team next year, but because that's the only two forward-sized dudes on the Pacers. That was Wednesday's show with Will Furr, if any of you want to listen to it, how that's affected their team on both ends, what the numbers say, who they've done well and poorly with, and what it means for the Pacers' future of team building. Today's is one that we might not see again this season, but not because of anything they've been doing. And that is Isaiah Jackson and Jalen Smith. We tried, and by we tried, I mean the Pacers tried, but I tried to break down the numbers of it. The Jalen Smith starter experiment early in the season with Miles Turner, that did not go well. Smith has been playing better as a five, but the intrigue here for me is more about Jackson because I think he can play two positions. I think he's maybe better as a four defensively right now than as a five. And so I'm curious how those two fit together, not only as an option for the Pacers' second unit, but if they can't play together very much, it's hard for me to imagine that a Pacers team that's going to be tight on roster spots this summer doesn't look at moving a big. And if they can't fit together, maybe that's part of it. If they can and they numbers look good or they feel like that can be part of a lineup, perhaps they're more willing to keep both, which is a lot of talking to say. I'm curious if they could play together more than they have so far this season. With Miles Turner out, it's been one starting, one backing them up. Now that I've gone through this very long, wordy explanation, the numbers have been pretty good, Jay. 193 minutes plus 7.2 net rating. No, that is not a misspeak. 116.9 offensive rating, 109.7 defensive rating. That's unsustainable, but also really good. So I'm intrigued, but also going to dig in as we keep talking to figure out why that's been the case and if it is unsustainable or if it's something the Pacers should try to explore a little bit.
Yeah, I think it does kind of feel to me like they're kind of auditioning like a potential bench lineup next year. I think the Turner extension sort of also maybe changed a lot about what they're looking to do with Smith and Jackson going forward, because that was a variable until going into the season. Absolutely. I do think Smith has looked much more comfortable as a five, like the whole, like if he'd shot, you know, in the mid 30s, like he kind of did last year, that's a different story, but from three, but that clearly hasn't been the case this year. And I think it's sort of been like, as like, you can see Jalen Smith back up five in the NBA pretty easily. Like, I think that's a role that you can kind of, you see him play and you see, yeah, sure. Okay. But I agree with you that Jackson does seem like the player you can play more spots. And therefore, I don't know, putting him at the four and kind of letting him kind of rove defensively and come over and just do his like highlight reel blocks out of nowhere plays. Like those are fantastic moments for him. And you can see that fitting with people. And I think they're both still super young. Like Jalen Smith is much younger than I would have probably guessed. They still what, 22. Like it's crazy.
It's insane.
And yeah, like it feels like he's been around forever. And I watched him play in college too at Maryland. So like he's been in my life against and on teams I'm cheering for a while, but it's, yeah, and I think it really is kind of a weird kind of roster dichotomy here where they can kind of go a couple different directions with it. Turner being back and seemingly being a pretty solid anchor point for the next few years might kind of make it seem like they have to move one of them. But as we've seen, this front office is very comfortable going into a season with like four centers on the roster too. So it's kind of hard to tell what they're going to do at any point.
Yeah, look, I don't think they have to move one, to be totally clear. But I do think, like, look, big picture, if Brissett walks in free agency and both vets walk of James Johnson and George Hill, that's their only three free agents on standard deals. Okay, they've got five picks. And then even then, it's like, you don't have all this cap space and win 30 whatever games to just sign nobody, right? Like, they're going to want to do something. Like, that is a little bit of a guess, but it's like, you know, you got to have spots to even bring in a guy in a trade or something, right? So, like, they're going to be really active in some way. And maybe it's not a big, but it seems like when you have those three plus Tice, and Tice is a different conversation, but you're going to be moving some bigs, right? And looking at these two, like, they've been dealing with this logjam forever. If they come to the conclusion that they don't want to play them together or they can't, then they almost have to explore something for one of them. I'm not saying which one or what they should exactly do, but that's why I think that clarifying what they can do together is so important. Here's a big number that stands out here. When they have been together on the floor, opponents shooting 30% from three. That sounds great. I would also suggest that that is little bit of luck, a lot of bit of luck, I would say. So I would say their defensive numbers are a little bit fluky. Now, the other thing to add in that I think is interesting, if you add Tyrese Haliburton into the mix, awesome on offense, 285 points on 237 possessions, completely awful on defense, 300 points allowed in 240 possessions with all three of those guys out there. That's a 125 defensive rating. So they've actually been really good in their minutes without Haliburton, but good enough without him, to survive and have good numbers. And that is the opposite of what you'd expect, which kind of also suggests there's some luck element here going on. So I like, conceptually, given their skills, and like I've said on the show way too many times, I think Jackson can play the four. Like, yeah, they can do some stuff together, but maybe it's not the best use of resources necessarily. But that said, the numbers do say it's gone okay. Just gone okay.
Yeah. And okay. Yeah, it's tough. Like, you can kind of see both, like, flashes for both of them, and you can kind of see, like, you can kind of envision where they fit. And it's, I don't know, it's so tough to predict development in players, especially from my position all the way outside of everything that's happening. But like, you, it kind of, I don't know, there's such a pivot point this offseason with how they want to make the roster look going forward and like how they want to play. And it's really fascinating to see like which way they lean. And so I think you do have to like really like their entire approach these last couple weeks, and it seems like through the rest of the season probably, is focused on development and like kind of seeing what they have in a lot of ways. And that's been kind of encouraging to me to know that that's kind of what they're considering too. Do you think either Smith or Jackson has shown so much that it's like, yeah, we have to keep these guys going forward. We have to find a way to make it work.
Keep both?
Yeah. Like,
no, I don't. Yeah. Like, Smith was awesome last year. To, you know, them re-signing him was like a parade level moment when it happened.
Yeah. You had to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And and maybe this is just a thing where like it takes a minute for him to figure out his role or figure out what his situation is. Cause post All-Star break, he's been better this year again. And that was a big thing for him last year. And obviously the trade deadline and all that is a factor as well. But since the All-Star break this year, Jalen Smith is 9.7 points, 6 rebounds on 49% from the field. That's better for him. And if you take out that little stretch where he was injured, those numbers get even better once again, especially the finishing. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just a post-deadline thing for him or something. But, you know, he's done well, but not as well as hoped. And Jackson has taken some steps forward and explored his game and like is hitting hook shots over Brook Lopez all of a sudden. And then also sometimes does some stuff that just kind of makes you scratch your head. So like, no, neither of them have done enough where you said they've got to be on the next great Pacers team or whatever. But they've also invested like not significant in Smith's case, but resources into both in terms of development and giving trading stuff or drafting stuff, whatever, to a point that like you don't want to give up on both necessarily. You don't have to. Look, if they get the first pick and get Wembanyama, whatever, like you do,
right.
you change your resources if that happens. But, neither of them have done enough to not only separate themselves to a point where it's like, yes, clear part of next great Pacers team, but also from each other. Right. Which is also a factor in this.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of where I'm at too. Like, I'd like to be able to see more of them, but at a certain point, depending on who they have to bring in, like who they look to do, like what they look to do either in the draft or in free agency or the trade market or whatever they do, like we might not be able to see more of them at some point just because there are so few minutes. I think that's why finding out if Jackson works as a four is probably the biggest part of all this to me, like you kind of let off with. Because I think we know that like Smith can play a backup five role and fill in for Turner if Turner's down for any length of time. But like finding a way for Jackson to see if he can fit around, I'd love to see him with Miles more too at the four.
They did that for around, a little bit. I forget when what stretch of the season that was. That happened a few times. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then it stopped happening.
Yeah, it's very easy to envision like some fun sequences of shot blocks there with those guys around the rim. But it's, yeah. So it's so tough because you could, I hate the word, I hate tweener. I hate that as a descriptor, and that's not really what this is, but you can kind of, you can almost see it working, but then also the limitations are also obvious. And so it's like, well, I love to be able to have more time to figure out whether it works or not. The Pacers just don't really have that though. Like they're going to have to make a decision at some point, maybe this offseason, they might be able to kick it down one more year, but like, it's still, it's a tough one. So I'm glad they're trying it though. Cause I think Jackson at the four type, that's really important to see for his development. If he can like find a way to make that work and kind of be not like a more of like a rolling four with a stretch type five, which they have in Turner and theoretically have in Smith, although that's been a little bit of a step back this year for him. Like, it's easy to see Jackson being able to get minutes, especially considering the Pacers have a dearth of four types. So, like, if Jackson can fill that role and be like a stand-in way in that way, and also have versatility to go small and play five, and like that, that's a really good fit for him. So I'm glad he's getting this run here to play that role. I think that's a good thing they're doing. And yeah, that's what they should be doing at this point of the year.
Yeah. Every once in a while he busts out a jumper and I kind of just go, okay. It's not very often, less than once a game, but it does happen.
He doesn't in the G League. Whenever he's gone down there, he shoots and hits three. So like it's
bigs in the G League are so bizarre because, Lazarus Jackson once said, if you can walk and chew gum and you're a big man in the G League, you'll put up 20 and 10. But some guy, like, he obviously stands out more than most guys. I don't know how I tugged this into my brain like it was some big thing that happened, but Isaiah Jackson plus Miles Turner, 13 minutes this season. So
yeah, I feel like
maybe not as many as I remember.
I think every time they came in together, everyone got all excited, and then Carlisle would kind of pull one of them very quickly after that. And I was like, oh, well, it's
Been
cool. But
I probably asked the question about it because I thought it was significant. That is not a significant amount of sample. The most minutes lineup with both Smith and Jackson, they were flanked by Mathurin, Hield, and Haliburton, right? Like, that's as much offense as you can get. Yep. So, of course, that group's offensive rating is bananas, but their defensive rating was God awful, right? 111 points on any possessions, and they still have a negative plus minus. The unit that really buoys this Smith Jackson duo defensively is when they played with Chris Duarte, Haliburton, and Hield. That group defended really well, and Duarte's been fine on defense this year, but that doesn't stand out to me as like a way better group defensively than that first five that I said. So I think there's a little bit of luck on their defensive side of this, but they've scored well enough with other offensive players who are good that makes me think, yeah, they can maybe hold up on the offensive end. And there's enough stuff that says, yeah, it's fine enough to work that if they keep both, that makes sense. But I also aesthetically, visually, data-wise, also would understand if they're like, we just can't keep doing this many young big thing anymore. But they have done well enough together that I think you can keep exploring it. And if they had another center they could play right now, I think it's something they would be exploring a little more. But it's tough without Turner at the moment.
Yeah, that never really lines up for that. And that's just kind of how it is. I think the Pacers kind of have a lot of guys who are, you can see as like eighth, ninth, 10th guys on good teams right now. And that's kind of, they're going to have to pick between that group at some point here. And that's kind of the tough call, I think, all around. But
agreed. Stylistically, you know, if one can play the four, that matters. But if they're all fives, we'll see where this has to go. Jay, one more topic today. Pacers Thunder tonight. Fascinating game between two teams that have gone totally different methods to rebuild back to being relevant-ish on the fringes of plans, whatever you want to call their seasons at the moment. I still think one of the weirdest stats in the NBA is, like, everybody talks about this Thunder rebuild being like this horrible long project. And look, they did some stuff that I, as a fan of basketball, do not support along the way. They've also played a playoff game more recently than the Pacers, which is completely wild. Only because they made it to game six in the first round of the bubble series and the Pacers got swept. But still, their build has been interesting and really buoyed by the fact that they got a trillion picks right away and Shea right away. And the Pacers build also buoyed by getting an all-star right away. But the interesting thing the Thunder did is, like, they figured out Shea was good pretty quick and they had like decent stuff and they could have tried. Like, I think they still have a winning record with Shea playing. Like, since they got him, like, even in the first couple of years, their record was good when he played, but they've stayed really patient in their build. And I found that to be interesting along the way with the way that they've made trades. Like, they traded away the Şengün pick, which was crazy. And they traded away the Deuce McBride pick, like all this stuff. That's like, man, if they had those guys, it could have been good a little faster because they really wanted to be patient in their build. And I'm curious, as you look back at these teams through the last couple of years, what parallels you see, what the Pacers could emulate or maybe don't want to emulate about what the Thunder have done to get where they are versus where the Pacers are right now.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see how different franchises approach this exact situation. Like, I know the Pacers situation and what they do on their timeline is probably more influenced by ownership than maybe Oklahoma City is. Like, you know, it's every situation is different in that way. I think it's interesting, especially now, like, the Pacers kind of have, like, a lot of people look at the Thunder's excess draft capital and think, well, they can't add all those guys. They're going to have to move picks. They'll have to make something happen at some point. And the Pacers kind of like a mini version of that in this draft itself, like this one draft. They're going to have to figure out right away and like what they're going to do. And that's fascinating to me. And I think there's, you might see them kind of kick a few of those things down the line, kind of like the Thunder did, just by necessity, because their roster, like they're, it's, they can't, you really can't add all those draft picks. Even if you made all of them, putting them all on the team would just be crazy. Like you'd be cutting five guys on this current roster, and that's, I don't know, it's insane. So it's really going to have to, so I think in that way, like they might have to kind of do something like that. I could also though see the Pacers trading some of those picks, maybe more and more for like a veteran now, like more of like a win now type player, or like a younger player. I'm not saying that's what they're going to do, but I think the Pacers would do that more quickly than the Thunder have so far. I think that might be a way they kind of split off there. But overall, like, I think there's definitely something to be said for how, like, you sort of try to add talent around a young star player. Like, the Thunder, Chet Holmgren obviously didn't get to play this year, but the Thunder kind of did, they've added that. It's kind of like their version of Mathurin, and the Mathurin joins the Pacers, plays around Halliburton, raises their ceiling a little bit, and raises their floor a little bit right now, and you have kind of another young player to build around. And then you kind of maybe take another bite at it this year too. And the Thunder also aren't afraid to compete now, though. Like, they didn't try to be as bad as possible this year. The Pacers, so
they're good. Exactly. They're kind of good. Yeah,
they're a good team. And and it's kind of similar to what the Pacers kind of were before Halliburton got hurt and they had that bad stretch. Like, we'll never really know. It's possible they hang on. Maybe they don't. I don't really know. But
yeah, you do.
It's okay. I was trying to be optimistic here, Tony. You're telling me. So the other thing is, like, the Pacers, you know, they held on to Miles Turner, right? They extended him. They could have maybe traded him for less just to make sure they got something if they were trying to kick things down the road a little more. And instead, they kept a veteran player on a deal that lets them be more competitive salary cap wise the next few years right now. So it's fascinating to see where that timeline is. And yeah, there are definitely some parallels, and it's fascinating to see two franchises take seemingly different approaches to it and still kind of come out in the same place with the same situation in a lot of ways. I think the Thunder have, I think, probably more like long-term assets and draft capital and things that. But yeah, it's not even close. And they had it when you can trade Paul George for that, that's the difference. But yeah.
I've hinted at it a few times that the Pacers, like, in theory, if the perfect fitting star became available, they'd be like decently well positioned to trade for that guy. But the Thunder could just immediately just stomp all over their offer. if they wanted the same player. And the Nets now are another team that, because they don't have their own picks, like if they want to stay competitive. So the Pacers probably have like top four or five best star offers if the right guy becomes available. That's irrelevant. But there are some interesting things about what the Thunder have done the last couple years that I want to draw parallels to with the Pacers. And a lot of them are draft related or draft night related. Right. And, you know, when we talk about the Pacers roster, like we did like 10 minutes ago, literally, you know, they have three roster spots at most this summer before trades. And so the natural thinking is, well, if they want to add players or make all these draft picks, they have to trade someone away. Right. And that makes sense. Right. People talk about consolidation trades or whatever. And yes, that's logical. Like they might have to do that. I'm not going to say they don't, but like the Thunder had way too many dudes after last year, right? They had to cut guaranteed contracts left and right after training camp. And some of that is because at the draft, they, instead of consolidating, you moved their picks around in a different way. They traded the Şengün pick to Houston and they got a 2022 first and a 2023 first in doing so, right? So they got two firsts for one and they're in later years. If the Pacers don't want to fill their roster with another pick this year and there's a guy available that some team really likes, maybe they could do that, right? That's another way to technically consolidate a roster spot. They traded two second-round picks for a guy they liked even more, right? And then you go down to their next draft, and they consolidate their picks upwards. They trade three firsts for Usman Dieng, which was really three firsts for Jalen Williams because those picks were back-to-back. But they picked Dieng first and then picked J-Dub with the second one. Doesn't matter. They traded to get their guy, right? So like that's also technically consolidating for your roster spots. Like those are things the Pacers could theoretically do also and have the same net effect in terms of roster spots, but aren't like trading a player on the team. So I think those are interesting ways that are being patient, right? If they are up at a pick and they don't love a guy, well, you don't have to make it, right? Like you can use that as your consolidating move or kick the can down the road or get more assets to do that big trade that I just referenced. Or if you love a guy in the draft like J-Dub, and holy smokes, were they right? That kid's amazing. Get him. Use your stuff to get him. So both of those methods, it's not, you know, they don't have the same goal. One is more patient, one's more urgent, but they both have the same thing where it's like, if you have not enough roster spots and lots of stuff to do it, like make your move, do it, make, get your stuff that you want, right? Like, don't just sit there and figure it out as you go, like get what you want. I don't know. It's hard to explain what I'm saying, but just like, they're always very active, I think, with their stuff. And that's what I think the Pacers need to take the lesson from.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Like, they're not just sitting things out, or like they're always trying to get. And I feel like Kevin Pritchard has a track record of jumping into things like that too. Like, yes, he's always, yes, searching. He's
very good at that.
Yeah. So like, I have kind of like excitement looking towards it, because I feel like based on everything that they have and everything they're looking at, like something almost kind of has to happen. And that's intriguing to me. Like, even if it is just like consolidating for the future and like moving things down the road, or like, you know, I believe that they're doing that with a purpose, which feels, it's good to have kind of like a direction that way. And can I feel like they're in a good spot to like strike if they have an opportunity to do so, or they're also not, but I don't think they're going to overpay. And I don't think they have to right now for anything that isn't going to work. And they're kind of in a, they have a good situation with leverage. And I think that's a good spot to be in for them.
So like we talk about roster spots for the Pacers, and we have like, they cut Jermichael Green on a guaranteed deal going into this season, coming out of camp. I just had it for me. They cut Trey Burke, Marquise Chris, and David Nwaba, right? Like, they said, screw it. We'll deal with the money. Like, we should use these spots constructively. And like, the Pacers can technically do the same thing. So the Thunder's approach has just been very unique at every step. They're not really worried about, you know, the right timing or anything. They're just always getting, they're always active and getting what they want at any given juncture. And I think that's been smart. I think they have a great coach. I think Sam Presti's done a great job with this, and team could make the playoffs this year. Pacers with lots of stuff, lots of space, and an interesting amount of roster openings, which is not very many, could take some notes. They played tonight. I think the Thunder want to win more than the Pacers. That is just a little bit of a hunch based on the last couple of games for these teams. We'll see what happens. Perhaps Gabe York plays. Perhaps Buddy Hield back. He did practice on Thursday. We'll see how that goes. But if Shea plays, I would expect the Thunder to win, as they did in the Paycom Center earlier this season. Do you have any thoughts on Thunder Pacers, Jay, or should we get out of here?
No, I think we're probably good to go, Tony. I think you've got me. I think it's been a fun year to watch the Pacers, though. I think it's been, after the last few years especially, it's been just a good time and a fun team to watch. Even now, like with just the young guys playing and they're trying to basically lose games, sort of, it's still been, you know, fun to watch them do that. And it's a nice change of pace from late in the McMillan years and then the one Bjorkgren year, of which we will not speak.
Yeah, the learning and responsibilities focus is smart, I think. Carlisle was asked by Dustin Dopierak at practice today, will Miles Turner, Tyrese, hurt Haliburton play again this season? Or is there anything you'd like to see from them? He did not say they wouldn't play again, but he also did not say that they would play again. If I'm reading between the lines, I doubt we see either one of them again this season, but we will see. Buddy Hield, I think, probably does end up playing a few more times, but the other two, I am guessing a little bit, but I kind of doubt it. We will see. This will be a fun game tonight, and they play the Cavs on Sunday. I'm going to go up there and be there. So Monday show, we'll be breaking down those two games. If Gabe York played, how he looked, any other big Pacers storylines at that time. Thank you guys so much for listening. Hope you had a wonderful week. Jay is on Twitter at JayRigdon5. I'm on Twitter at TEastNBA. While we still have it, I can't believe it. Verification checks are gone on April 1st. So maybe my at will be different, because I can finally change it and get the NBA out of my name, not have to lose anything there. Either way, thank you guys so much for listening. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you soon.